Okay, in moments we say we are broadcasting against against all logic and hope. Folks, we're on the air. This is Mike Lafferty, host of the Ghost Show podcast. Next to me is the Ghost Show boss, Christopher McLaughlin. How are you this evening, Chris?
I'm great, sir. I'm privileged to be with such fabulous people talking about such a fabulous topic. And for all the backers on our Transgressive Horror Pod project who tuned in tonight, I got a couple of exciting announcements to make about the project. I hope we can get to in a minute.
Yellow. Hey, hang on 1 second. My my mini me back here, Connor, he's occasionally saying hi and catching in with commentary. So I want to acknowledge him. Everyone sees you, Connor. They say hi. All right, cool. Moving on. Alex Thomas from Green Ronin and various other places joins us tonight. Good to have you, sir.
Well, thank you so much for having me back again. I'm excited to talk about laughing and scaring people.
Yeah, I have buried the lead. The theme for today is comedy in horror. So we're looking at the, as the cheesy DJ in front inside me would say, the lighter side of the scary stuff. And a frequent commenter, and I'm glad to have him here in the virtual flesh, Mr. Sean Avera. How you doing, Sean?
I'm great, thank you. I'm glad to be here. It's an honor.
And you have almost a better radio voice than me, so feel my jealousy up there in Canada, sir.
Oh, yeah. And we have to express our gratitude on air to Sean. Sean is here because, A, he's awesome, and, B, related to that awesome is he was one of our super backers on the Transgressive Horror Kickstarter, and this was one of his rewards. So nice. Thank you. We thank you for making the dream come true, and we hope that this will be some small recompense for your support and generosity, which we noted and very much appreciated.
You're definitely welcome. Glad to help make it a reality.
Sweet. And I guess I also buried the lead in that this is the first podcast for Ghost Show since we funded successfully.
Second
show. All right. So thanks to all our backers. You guys are awesome. And last but not least, Cynthia is here. Cynthia, thanks very much for joining us. Appreciate you showing up.
No problem. I've been really excited about this topic, actually.
Cynthia Celeste Miller. I gave everyone else a last name. I apologize. I didn't give you that. Cynthia Celeste Miller from Spectrum Games. Thank you for coming out. And Sean, you know what? I'm sorry. Contractually, I'm obligated to play our intro music. Give me just 1 second. That assures that we are a high productions value, quality podcast that... The best choice of your podcasting dollar tonight, ladies and gentlemen. So,
and suggest that we're reasonably funky.
Reasonably funky. Just enough. All right.
Not funky fresh, though. Just a little funky.
Just a little funky. Think like 50-year-old Will Smith as opposed to 25-year-old Will Smith. That's about where we're at. So, you know, DJ Jazzy Jeff calls him sometimes, but it goes to voicemail most days. Cynthia, you okay? It wasn't that funny. You all right?
No. Okay. Oh, my table setup is off.
We're just Marky Mark, no Funky Bunch.
As is Marky Mark these days. And the Funky Bunks are probably going straight to voicemail, too. Mr. Sean Avera from Canada, you get to go first, sir. The subject is horror and comedy. Tell us the film you selected for this topic and why you like it.
I selected Tremors, the original one. From 1990, and it was basically, I'm not really that much of a real horror guy for the gore type horrors, the shock type horrors, but the comedy horrors like Tremors and such is really what in my ballpark for it. Plus, it had the benefit of having a couple of some of my favorite actors in it. Fred Ward, yes. Who I first met in Remo Williams, The Adventure Begins, when I was a kid. And then Victor Wong, who I remember very fondly from Big Trouble in Little China.
Yes.
There's also Kevin Bacon, and I think I know his gardener, but sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, yeah, of course, Kevin Bacon. You know, wasn't as big a fan of Kevin Bacon or knew him that much from there. But then there was Michael Gross playing a complete opposite character, showing that he really can act from the father and Family Ties. And Reba McEntire putting in first performance as well. I mean, so, you know, it was... just very different. The big thing is, though, it's like a lot of movies where the marketing really sort of let it down for it, and it just didn't properly let you know what a great ride you were going to be in when you saw this movie. Like I said, there's a lot of great, there is the horror element there, but the comedy bits are just fabulous. There's a lot of great humor in it that you go through. Plus, I like the fact is you don't really see the monster that much. As you know, it takes those elements of don't show it off, like Jaws. You don't show the shark as much. It leaves a lot to the imagination. So as it builds up, instead of being a creature feature where you see everything in details, you just see little bits. Mostly the tentacles never, and sort of the displacement in the ground and the after effects. I was going to say, and the fact that it did spawn a little mini franchise after the fact. You know, to me, not necessarily as great as the first movie, and I'm very disappointed in the fact that Kevin Bacon was approached and did apparently a pilot that I so really want to see for it. It would have ignored the continuity of the other movies and the TV series, but it looked very interesting, and kind of one of those people hoping if they're not going to air it at some point, it leaks somewhere somehow.
Now, wasn't there a series of movies on Sci-Fi Network back in the day for this?
Yes, there's I think about 6 or 7 movies in total.
Woo! I didn't realize there were that many.
Michael Gross really made a career out of it for it, because Kevin Bacon didn't return. I think they got Fred Ward for at least the first sequel. But after that, it was just basically Michael Gross carrying the pictures. I think the last one in it or something, they killed off the character or something for that, and that was the end. And they were going to carry on with Jamie Kennedy.
Oh, wow.
Mm.
So Wikipedia tells me there was a 2003 series that had its episodes air out of order on Sci-Fi.
That sounds about right for Sci-Fi in 2003.
Mm-hmm. It aired up here on Space in Canada as well. It was a fun little romp, but again, it was more of an action series type of thing.
All right, cool. I've always been surprised this didn't somehow get made into an RPG, but it's pretty easy enough to do in Savage Worlds without even trying hard.
Well, speaking of Savage Worlds, let's face it, there's a good healthy chunk of this in a horror weird Western game that will remain nameless and seems to have borrowed its signature monster for their game. So it's kind of already there. If you look,
and the game may or may not rhyme with Deadlands.
You know, guys, I've had Clinton Shane on the podcast a few times. Let's not piss him off, okay?
Oh, I love Shane.
Yeah.
It's an homage. It's an homage.
Yeah, imitation is the greatest form of flattery, right?
There you go.
Hey, as a designer, I've borrowed a lot of stuff from other sources. That's for sure. So yeah, that was not meant as a slight against Shane at all.
That's my favorite tool in my developer kit is the serial number filer.
I mean, right.
Yeah, I've got a friend I'm trying to talk into doing more writing, and he's like, oh, I hate it. I just wound up borrowing stuff, and it's terrible. And I'm like, you know the difference between a genius and a hack? How obscure your references are. Oh, man. Of course, I probably think that way because I'm a hack. But I embrace it. I lean into it. I'm proud of it, so... All right, Mr. Thomas, you are the guest who's been on here least of everyone on the, well, after Sean, the guest who's been on here least. Let's talk about your movie, which was Tucker and Dale versus Evil, followed by Thanks Killing. Which one do you want to talk about first?
You know, let's talk about Thanksgiving first.
All right, cool.
I talked about Tucker and Dale last time I was here.
That is true, and that was great. Love those movies.
So, Thanksgiving is a wonderful little holiday movie about a turkey who is necromanced back to life and takes revenge on the white man for the transgressions towards the native peoples of North America. I am familiar with this story because I was in Thanksgiving the musical. I played the part of the hick because the four main characters who aren't the turkey are the jock, the slut, the virgin, and the hick. And I was the hick that was such a wonderful role to play. That was in one of those musicals that has a splash zone where we throw fake blood all over the audience. And we get my death scene was the turkey exploding out of my chest burster style. Which was very hard to accomplish in a community theater space.
How'd you pull that off, man?
So we had a magician box that was covered in a curtain, and it was right behind the curtain. So I would eat this big plastic turkey,
mm-hmm.
and then I would go back there and I would start making these noises. And then we had a fake torso built into the chest thing that I would force the turkey out through, and then I would dramatically die.
My hat's off to your prop master.
Oh yeah, they're awesome. They're so creative because they have to be. Our theater space is about the size of a college dorm.
Wow.
It's on the second story above a bar in downtown Columbus, and it's wonderful.
It's one of those places the brochure describes as intimate.
Yes, incredible. It seats like 30 people if you cram them all in there together.
I got to tell you that the most fun I've had in theater has usually been spaces like that.
Mm-hmm.
Although I haven't got a chance to go to much one lately because I live in the suburbs now. But I just found the full trailer on YouTube, so that's what's playing in the background here.
Yeah, that guy with the cowboy hat, that was my character. Or the baseball cap, that was my character.
Sweet. At any point in this movie, do I get to see a resurrected, zombified turkey?
Oh, I'm sure we will.
Okay. That's kind of the shot I'm holding out for here. All right, cool.
And, you know, horror and comedy, they just go so well together because I think they're both appealing to the same sort of primal desire to trigger an emotion in the viewer.
Mm-hmm.
And they both rely on the same mechanic, which is timing. Timing is the number one thing in comedy, and it's also the number one thing in scaring somebody versus startling somebody.
It's an interesting discussion because, I mean, they're both, like you say, going what they call a... boy, what was the phrase we heard when it was all the smart people on the podcast? A body movie, because you know both laughter, body. Well, it's an involuntary reaction. If you're scared or if you're laughing, mm-hmm. you can't really control it. It's the movie's going to make you do that if it does its job. Okay, there. That's what I've been waiting for. All right, that makes my night right there.
Oh my god, that movie is crazy.
And the Billy video is so amazing in that movie.
The Billy video?
Yeah. One of the characters named Billy, when after he dies, his friend on there, there's this really sappy song. He's like, Billy, Billy, Billy. It was so terrible. It was meant to be terrible. But it was great.
Yeah, that was my duet. I got to sing the song Man Love because me and the nerd, the virgin, we have this unrequited secret gay love with each other. And I don't confess it until I'm bleeding to death from the turkey exploding out of my chest.
Nice.
That was so good.
I have to see this now. Okay, cool.
You do.
Yeah, if you can find somewhere to watch the musical, I would definitely recommend it. It's in the same sort of vein as Evil Dead the Musical, which I've also done. I was the bit part demon and the moose in Evil Dead the Musical.
Alex, I get this picture of you just living your best life out there in Ohio. Like you get to do cool RPG writing projects and you get to do cool theater stuff. I just, hats off to you, man. I wish I was living your life.
I have my moments.
Yeah, sweet.
Yeah, it's busy. It's very, very busy. I'm planning a wedding for October too.
Congratulate you for?
Yeah, I'm getting married October 31st of this year.
Congrats.
All right. All right. If I wouldn't be out of frame, I would give you a standing O just for choice of date.
You will never hit that anniversary. That's a good thing.
I am spiritually standing up and applauding.
And we're having a costume party at the reception, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
That is pretty awesome. I had a friend who got married with a medieval costume wedding several years ago, and I had to fly back to Indiana, and there's like one friend from high school I still hang out with, and he showed up and he's looking at everybody dressed up like a Renaissance fair. He's like, motherfucker. You took me to a wedding with a bunch of people who believe in Highlanders, didn't you?
Ooh, Highlander weddings never go well. It always ends in a sword fight.
Blood. And now, my wife's over my head, and she's hearing all this and going like, well, at least he wore pants.
This wasn't a Texas Chainsaw Massacre wedding.
Now you're talking.
Yeah, the food's always really good at that, but don't ask where they got the meat.
I was in a meeting in South Dakota that was very similar. Except the food wasn't good. Hey, Cynthia Celeste Miller, Spectrum Games. Let's talk about your movie, which was Student Bodies. And luckily, my son is now watching Clone Wars on my phone, so he won't be seeing this trailer. So
good, because I doubt it has anything, but I mean, you know.
It is
the called name student. Like Student Bodies. How bad could it be?
Yeah, this was a movie I remember really wanting to see it on Showtime when I was a kid. But I never stayed up late enough to be able to. So
I watched it on HBO in the early 80s when I probably really shouldn't have. But it's it is a pretty crazy movie. It's as far as I know, the first true spoof of the slasher genre. I believe it came out in 1981. So, you know, you're talking the year. 81 had more slasher movies than any other single year. And this was, I believe, one. It may have been 82, but I'm pretty sure it came out in 81. And it completely took the whole genre and disassembled it and poked fun at all the sillier parts. Like here in this scene, he's trying to pick a weapon, and he's breathing. No, not this. And finally, he comes to the paperclip. And because, you know, who wouldn't, right? And so as you're seeing here, he's going up the stairs and he keeps getting stuck in gum. It's actually one of my favorite scenes of the whole movie. And then, you know, when they find the bodies, the mother, she overreacts to like everything. Oh my God, the baby's gonna left dead. She's in the sink. Ah! And then all these little things, she freaks out. And then when she sees the dead body of her, I think it was daughter and her boyfriend, she's like, huh.
What's that guy doing? What?
He's an insane school counselor. And that over there was waving his arms while he's, well, that is Malbert. And he is the janitor and an odd guy. In fact, the guy that played him, they called him the Stick. And I don't think they ever knew what ended up happening to him after this movie. I've not been updated on it, but last I knew, nobody really knew what happened to that actor.
Oh. He enjoyed a second career as Slenderman.
He must have, yeah.
Every scene in this trailer has made me go, what? And then what?
Yeah.
What is happening?
After I asked a couple questions, I realized I shouldn't ask any more questions because every scene in the trailer was something else. I'm sorry, so I cut you off, Cynthia. Please go ahead.
No, that's it. But no, it's a very fun. It's my favorite parody, straight out parody movie. And you know, movies later like Scary Movie and all those, they took some of the same approach later on. But I honestly don't feel they did it as well. As it was more polished movie. I mean, due to the era and budget than Student Bodies was, but I think Student Bodies, I laughed a hell of a lot more. And every time I see it, every time I hear the freaking shop teacher going, talking while we're making horse head bookends? I mean, he's like obsessed with horse head bookends, and he never explained why. There's no build-up. It's like, it's so random. You just go, who thought of this? But when you're thinking that, you're just giggling like a goon because it's just so stupid and random.
Is it indelicate if I ask if that's a stoner comedy? It's okay, because I mean, there's a certain genre of entertainment, and let's, you know, late night Comedy Central, late night Cartoon Network, that is perhaps targeted to people watching in an altered state.
I mean, honestly, I've never done pot, but I imagine it would be fun to watch while on pot, but I don't think it was really a movie of that nature specifically. But it was just a heck of a fun movie, and I watch it quite a bit, actually. More than I probably should. More than is healthy.
I'm definitely going to check it out because I've got questions. Yes. I don't know if I'll get answers, but I've got questions.
You may or may not get answers. Some of the stuff is just so weird that it's like, where did they come up with that? And, you know, they never really explain it. I kind of wonder if there's, like, a bunch of scenes that have been cut, and it's not in the DVD release or anything like that. But I kind of wonder if there was some scenes that maybe explained a few things. I mean, they don't leave anything unexplained that's important to the plot.
Things like horse head bookends.
Did it come out in the 80s? Is that when it came out?
Huh?
Did it come out in the 80s? Is that when it came out?
81 or 2.
Then I'm just going to say cocaine's a hell of a drug. That's where it came from.
It's odd how much that can explain about that period in time. This watching early MTV, like, what was going on here? Wait, everyone was on cocaine. Now I get it.
It suddenly comes together, yeah.
It's cynical, but sometimes you read, especially musician autobiographies. I read The Dirt by Motley Crue.
Mm-hmm. Or, well, you know, was it Stephen King, you know, when he's explaining some of the stuff he's doing? It's like, it's the same.
I wish I could pass out and write Cujo like he did. Wish I could wake up and Cujo was just in my typewriter. Like,
okay. I'm pretty sure somebody was on substances when Student Bodies was made, though. I mean, how else do you explain the killer who they call the Breather? Literally, he has a rubber chicken up to his mouth and the other end of it up to the phone, and he's talking to her. And she goes, and the lady on the other end, I think the school principal, she's like, you sound like you're speaking through a rubber chicken. The rubber chicken. Like, he literally calls, you know, the mysterious phone call that's in every slasher movie that, well, at least with people that talk or at least breathe. They have the babysitter or the whatever, the teenager, get a mysterious phone call, and they pick it up, and there's heavy breathing. Well, they do that. And it's like, she picks up, she goes, hello. He's like, and she hangs it up. She's like, she calls back. And she picks up, she goes, hello. I said.
Oh, my Lord.
So they don't miss about having a landline in the old day was occasionally you would get prank calls that were just like that in the early 80s.
I mean, I had them.
So, wow, we could just do a whole episode about this one movie, I think. But we are a high production value quality podcast. And we should press on and talk about Chris. Which one first?
Before we get to that, mm-hmm. You cued me on a story that I very rarely get to tell. I have to tell my favorite horror movie drug connection. I first came across this film on the CBS late night movie. And that's where I first discovered Island Claws. Yeah. It's a film about killer crabs. And it's pretty much, you know, the Jaws ripoff that you're expecting it to be until you get to the end. And then out of nowhere comes, especially for 1980, this like really impressive practical effect giant crab.
Wow.
And it's like, did they steal this from another movie like Ed Wood? And then years after the fact, I found out that the producer was a guy whose lifelong dream was to get into the movies. So he went to a relative of his who was a major South Florida drug kingpin who really needed to launder some drug money. So he said, oh, here's $7 million in like 1980 money. And so there are name actors in it, and they use real crabs, which to me is always creepier. And then there you go, at the end of the film, that $7 million suddenly appears on the screen, this giant freaking crab. And just knowing that I'm watching drug money being laundered before my eyes, it's added a whole new layer to this film. And yes, it's out on Blu-ray from Scorpion Releasing, and I highly recommend it if you're into giant crab movies or early 80s drug culture.
Professor, I need you to know that you said Island Claws and my brain didn't go to crabs first. I thought it was Santa Claus on Vacation murder.
Same. Same.
I don't know what that says about me.
It could be the sequel.
Yeah, it reminds me of, you guys remember that plot line in The Sopranos way back in the early 2000s where Christopher was like, hey, no one ever loses money on direct-to-video horror movies. Oh, so true. They did, it was it called the Pork Shop Massacres or something. It was it was basically the horror version of the first few seasons of The Sopranos done as a movie inside The Sopranos starring one of the oh God, who was the guy playing Tony Soprano analog? He's from that famous family of actors. You know what I'm talking about, right? Baldwin. Yes. One of the lesser Baldwins was playing, you know.
Lesser Baldwins. Yes. Like lesser demons and greater demons. You have lesser Baldwins.
That checks out. That's just good science.
And we must acknowledge that Sopranos creator David Chase got his first big break by writing scripts for Kolchak the Night Stalker.
Yes, he did.
Classic early 70s series.
Indeed it was. Indeed it was. Chris, we're at maybe a three-quarter of the way point through the podcast, and it's occurred to me you had some important Ghost Show Press news you wanted to...
Okay, cool. And then I'll segue into my history thing here. We put out some upper-level backer rewards, like being on the podcast, and we're great that Sean is here. But we also put out a challenge for if you will pay us this amount of money, we will let you pick the essay that you want to see. And we finally sorted out all the details on that. And for those of you that backed it, these essays will be in the book at no additional charge. Just some added goodness for you. And we're not supposed to use backers' names on the air, so I will leave them anonymous. But I can talk about my writers. But awesome backer number one, we are writing about Noroi the Curse, which is a more recent found footage doc style film, and noted horror commentator Alex Bledsoe is going to be joining us to write about that. And then our second choice is a film that I have a weird relationship. I haven't gotten around to watching it yet, but the soundtrack is done by one of my favorite groups. So I've heard the soundtrack. I just need to watch the actual film. But yes, but our other super backer picked the film Knife Plus Heart, which was a hit at the 2018 Cannes Film Festival. And I had to write this down here. It's a French, Mexican, Swiss production. It does have a French title, but I won't butcher that language by trying to say it. and handling that for us is going to be an incredible young new voice, film studies graduate named Brian Loy, who's also the creative director of the Northern Virginia Alamo Draft Houses. And if you're a Northern Virginiaite with great taste in movie theaters, you know Brian like you do your relatives. And we get to see on a regular basis his intense depth and love of film. And I'm so glad to have him as a part of this project. So there you go. There's our two bonus topics and our two. I'm glad your kid has turned around.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing. Actually, he's actually into the topic. He's reenacting that last scene from The Blair Witch right there. So okay, now he's in background.
Yes. All right. Now you want to get so me on humor and horror. I just got through editing Ken Height's contribution on The Uninvited, and Ken, as he is wont to do, because Ken is brilliant. Does this great little history about how like the original comedy and horror is, and he makes a great case for just how many of these there are, films where it's basically comedian wanders into a haunted house. You know, you go through it, you've got, you know, Bob Hope and Martin and Lewis. And if it didn't happen to the Three Stooges at least four times, I'd be incredibly shocked by that. And that's kind of one of his takes on his film, The Uninvited, is that for the first time, it's like actors walking into a haunted house, and it's not all intended for laughs. But then, so I started thinking like the first real attempt to work, to have some kind of balance between the comedy and the horror and the comedy was when you get to Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. And this has always been such a schizophrenic film for me because, you know, I hate to draw in hate mail from the over 80 demographic, but I just, of all the comics from that era, I just have the hardest time warming to Abbott and Costello.
Thank you.
Just because, you know, I mean, I just sit there and go like, so his whole gimmick is that he's whiny and his supposed best friend like is abusive toward him. So, like, I watch Abbott and Costello, and it's like this fantastic horror movie plot that occasionally these two guys that got like a 20-year career based on like three jokes, you know, and they're able, you know, so yeah, it's almost like if I could edit this film, I would love to edit Abbott and Costello out of Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein and just watch the bits with Bela and Boris. So yes. So the hate mail is care of Ghost Show Press. All those of you over 80 people who are mad at me for dissing Abbott and Costello. But they never really seemed to get the balance right after that. And, you know, I mean, Abbott and Costello as they were wont to do, just took this thing what would they have had back then? The mimeograph machine, and just kept running it off till the darn thing broke. You know, they met the mummy, they met Boris Karloff, they met the doctor. And if these guys would have been in a different era, I'm sure we would have gotten like Abbott and Costello Meet Freddy and Jason. And they might not have survived that one. I kind of like that.
Oh, but anyway, what could have been?
Yes. Well, but for me, like the first films that get it right are when Vincent Price hits the 70s with the Abominable Dr. Fives, and as soon as this and the thing is, I didn't realize just how brilliant that film was till I tried to describe it to other people. And it's like, if you try to tell people, you know, it's about this vengeful steampunk madman who's upset because his wife died on the operating table and he's out to murder the 10 doctors and nurses that tried to save his wife in these grotesque manners drawn from the Old Testament. You know, one guy, he has them eaten by like bats and rats and like freezes them to death. He like drains one guy completely of blood. And like, I get about halfway through before people start realizing like, oh my God, what are you? But then I realize, it's like, no, you have to watch it. Like the comedy, like Vincent and minds out of all this. And for me, it contains maybe the perfect horror comedy scene. They figured out who the next victim is. They know his death is going to be based on right there you go. There it is. There's the scene I'm talking about, on the Plague of Beasts. The character is on screen for like 15 seconds. He opens a door, and from all of a sudden across the street, a brass unicorn comes through the window and impales him. The guy gets two lines. And the inflappably British investigators, their reaction to this poor doctor who's just been brutally murdered in front of them is they look at the screw on the horn that's impaled him to go, I think it's a left-hand thread. And they immediately try to unscrew the body. And they pan back to the stuffy British guy's newspapers. And the guy's feet are spinning around in circles up against the wall. And so it's like I'm showing this to somebody for the first time. I just say, okay, two words that are going to change your life. Brass unicorn. So, yeah, you know, to me, Fibes starts this revolution all the way up to Thanksgiving to films that can successfully thread that needle of like having genuinely disconcerting content and genuinely making you laugh. I mean, usually if you watch a film, you're happy if you get either one of those. But yeah, but salute and mad respect to the films that can give you both.
Oh, and I think Vincent Price doesn't get enough credit as a comedian because he's hilarious.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, God.
He's terrifying, but he's hilarious.
Yes.
Another film that I want to just kind of mention real quick that has a very interesting way of mixing the horror with the comedy, and that is Behind the Mask, The Rise of Leslie Vernon.
Yes, I love that movie.
From 2006, I believe. And what it does is like the first three-fourths of the movie or so, or two-thirds, somewhere around, is kind of a romp, kind of a comedy parody. And then like the last section of it becomes like true legit horror, and the shift is so stark and so sudden that it works even though it really shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And that really does goes a step further in kind of taking apart the slasher genre. Like they explain why psycho killers could be walking and still catch up to the people, their victims. I mean, they like disassemble and refer to it as an industry, because this student film team is actually got the skinny that there's going to be this guy and it's based on a legend who's going to be launching a reign of terror. He's going to introduce himself as this serial killer. And so he treats it like an industry. He has a mentor who taught him and they go and visit him. And it was just really good. And up until the very point where things change, you're like, this is cute and clever. Oh my God, what the hell is happening here? And it becomes legitimately suspenseful at that point.
And I think most of it is down to both the clever writing and the main actor, Nathan Basil's commitment to the role, because he can switch between like goofy, charming, you know, main character guy to just like, oh my God, that guy's a serious psychopathic murderer.
Yeah, because he's so charming that you drop your guard. You completely drop your guard.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that movie while you were talking about student bodies, because I was like, oh yeah, that him picking the weapons, that sounds familiar.
Yeah, and
the methodology behind why he's choosing to be the kind of murderer that he is. It's so, if you like horror movies, I 100% recommend
watching that. It's literally my second favorite horror movie of all time.
I almost did my essay about that instead of Tucker and Dale.
Oh, wow.
Wow,
Sean, you got to throw in another favorite, man.
Well, I was going to say before that about Abbott and Costello. I mean, one of the reasons why they're considered the gods are because they got there first. I mean, they're who's on first repertoire. They weren't the only ones ever performing that, or actually the first people to perform that. It was a regular routine based on a regular routine used in the Catskill Comedians that were incredibly pissed off once they popularized it and got it on the radio and record, you know, and things like that, so that they couldn't use that material anymore.
Wow.
Yeah, it's no one wants to talk too much about plagiarism in stand-up comedy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you occasionally hear like Carlos Mencia or Amy Schumer gets called out, but there's so much of it even these days. So I'm sorry.
Robin Williams. So it sounds like our next essay is Abbott and Costello are the Elvis of comedy.
Yeah, Robin Williams, as Chris was pointing out, he was infamous for decades. And the horrible thing about Robin Williams, he would steal your act and do it in front of you at an open mic, and he would do it better than you did it.
Ooh.
And Sean, I cut you off completely. Please go ahead, sir.
No, I was just going to say, you know, so that's one of the reasons why I think that their movie worked, again, is because they're one of the first to do it properly, right? But let's be honest, I think and that's what a lot of their stuff was, is just because they were first, really. You know, there's so many other comedians of that time that I think would have been interesting. I don't know. I think, you know, this is the classics. Army of Darkness is a huge popular one in my household, with my wife, her sister, and all that. Huge Bruce Campbell fans, which is one of the reasons I got dragged to a convention one year so we could meet Bruce Campbell.
I want to meet him so bad.
It was a great experience.
Wait, Sean, who was on first?
And you know,
I keep waiting for them to remake this movie after they remade the other one, the prequel to this. Is that ever going to happen, you think? I mean, this one's such a classic. I don't know how you can, but then they keep remaking movies. I wouldn't think you could do that with.
Well, they are making another Evil Dead movie, but I don't know if it's supposed to be related to Army of Darkness or not. I know Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell are involved.
Did you know there was a Evil Dead series? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was going to say, well, there's always movies that are almost always constantly going to be remade, but they never get it off the ground. Big Trouble in Little China, that remake with The Rock, right, has been talked about for now a couple of years. You know, it will happen when it happens. The same way that they, you know, they talk about other movies like, oh, we're going to do a Doc Savage. And they said, oh, we got Schwarzenegger. Oh, he became the governor of California. We can't do it this year. Move it down. Okay, yeah, we definitely got The Rock to do it now, right? So they keep moving along for that. I would imagine that it's got to be one of those things talked about. But then the big thing is, as Bruce Campbell said, you know, when I was at the convention, he said, it's money. You know, it says it, honestly, if it really had made that much money as they thought it would have been, you know, that we would have had more sequels. in the theater. They would have given Sam Raimi the cash, and they would have done it a lot sooner. You know, he is surprised when they do come back to the properties as much as it is, just because of the fact that he went, it all comes down to dollars. If they think they can, it is justified, they'll do it. But you know, the initial time, it just didn't rake in enough money for them. But you know, this is how we got the TV series and things like that. It's just because of the way the audience is now, is they can make a good amount of money, and they realize that our audience is so fragmented.
That's with you know, everyone's streaming now, no one goes to the theaters, so there's a lot more of that going on.
Well, I'm sitting right here.
Well, Chris goes to the
I kid.
I want to go to Alamo Draft House so bad with you. Every time I see pictures of it, I'm like, that looks amazing. That
if
looks
you like were the best movie theater in the world. If you're anywhere in my vicinity, I will buy.
I'm coming.
I'll drive, I'll buy the booze.
Every time Chris posts a picture of him at the Alamo Draft, I'm like, you lucky mother. We don't have any of those around where I live.
I've got an AMC. That's where I have to go.
Next April, we'll have three. Within driving distance. I lucked into the best place in the world for me to live. I really
go right to hell, Chris.
I deserve it. I deserve it.
It's called Ohio. We have a seat for you if you want. You can't escape once you get here, though. It's like Hotel California.
I live in Southeast Kansas. It's legitimately the cultural armpit of the universe here. So.
Mike, you want to trash Denver while we're on a roll here?
I you have to understand, Chris. I grew up in Indiana, and by comparison, Kansas is like the Paris of the prairie. although I will say, if I drive I-70, I do it at night, so I don't have to look at it. But it's just all that corn. I was trying to talk my wife into going to Indiana in about 10 days just to get a break, and she's like, what's in Indiana? Why do I want to go to Indiana? Nothing in Indiana. I'm like, well, there's corn, there's also soybeans,
and there's the Indianapolis Colts.
That's true, Connor. Mm-hmm. There's the Indianapolis Colts.
To be fair, Ohio is hell, but Indiana is purgatory, is how I've always looked at it. I don't like going there.
I was gonna say, up here, I'm in Ottawa, which is a really a government town. We used to have several repertoire, cinemas, but they've been pretty much decimated at this point. And it's very unlikely some of them might come back. One closed because was the land it was on is just the value was so great. And our big one, which a favorite of mine, Bytown Cinema, you know, probably we might be in the same vein at that. Mind you, a lot of the office spaces are being sold off, so there probably isn't much pressure on it anymore, which might be the old thing. But we have lost a good number of our great theaters there.
That's terrible.
Okay, well, we are back on the air now, which is good news, because YouTube suspended our show during the Evil Dead trailer.
What?
We got a copyright complaint for playing it with the sound off in the background while we were talking about it.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, at least I didn't. Wow, that's the first time that's ever happened. Jeez Louise. Okay, so. Well, now I'm scared to play the next trailer I was going to play, which was I was going to touch on The Babysitter from Netflix, which is remarkable because a lot of Netflix original content is, no offense to our friend from Great White North, but a lot of this stuff is filmed in Vancouver and has... You know, it all looks like Vancouver has in different direction. Nothing wrong with filming stuff in Vancouver, but you can just kind of tell they were like, let's just punch the time clock and make a movie, guys. Get this done. We can get back to the hotel by 5.
Well, my cousin's a cameraman up there. There's only so much they can do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's lots of good content made up there, but there's so much content made up there. And if you watch a lot of it, you're like, okay, I know exactly where this is being filmed. And a lot of the Netflix stuff, they just... We need to fill the streaming hole. We need more stuff. And this was one of those rare movies from Netflix where they kind of actually tried. So it's sort of remarkable in that. But what I liked about it was the first little bit you know, he's a teenage boy with a babysitter, which, you know, there's already some freight there, but they really connect and she's cool and they get along. And then all of a sudden you find out that she's having a satanic ritual at his house to summon a demon and they're going to kill him. And, you know, it's kind of just turns into, you know, a Scream at that point. But,
I mean, what did you do on Friday night growing up?
I used to drink a lot in cornfields, if I'm being really honest. But I like, I grew up in Indiana. There wasn't much else to do. So,
yeah. Yeah, I loved The Babysitter also. The sequel.
I haven't seen the sequel yet. I did like the first one.
Doesn't even feel like the first one.
I've got a pretty hard anti-sequel rule. It takes a lot for me to break it. So I haven't even bothered with that. So. And I think that's about the end of the podcast. We're coming up just 7 minutes before the top of the hour. This has been a lot of fun. Do we have any closing thoughts before we wrap it up and call it a show?
Well, I have to thank you, Mike, for making all this happen. I have to thank Alex and Cynthia for handing in two fantastic pieces of writing that I'm so honored and blessed to be able to publish. And I want to thank Sean and in particular and all the backers who chipped in something to make that happen. Right now I'm the most blessed man on earth because I've read this whole book and I'm so excited about other people getting to see it. I thought it would be good. And even I'm my imagination and my vocabulary are beggared by just the brilliant things that people found in these frequently dodgy films. So thank you all very much for making the dream come true and bankrolling more of these shirts.
Nice. Alex, any closing thoughts before we put a bow on it?
No, just keep watching funny horror movies. You'll be happy.
All right. Mr. Vera, thank you for joining us. Any closing thoughts, sir?
Well, I'd just like to thank for letting me be a part of this. It's been a great experience. Thank you very much. I've had an excellent time.
Well, it's been a pleasure having you. Cynthia?
Really, no. Just had a lot of fun. This was everything I was hoping it would be. Although I would like to throw one movie out there, no summer or anything, but Sorority Babes at the Slimeball Bowlerama. Watch it, live it, learn it, love it. It's nuts. It's insane. So that's really
with that title, who would guess, right?
Right.
I feel like I just had an aneurysm. What did you say?
Sorority Babes at the Slime Ball Bowlerama. And it is mag freaking magnificent.
I have questions, but that's probably for another show. So
those were all words.
Yeah, those. You know, we could do a second round of horror and comedy. It's a legitimate subgenre. There's a bunch of them.
I'm down. Sir, I mean, I know you're joking, but I'm serious.
Oh, I was so thinking I could do 10 minutes on the first two or three seasons of Buffy. So
see?
Yeah. But then, if there are any drug lords out there watching the show, I have a spec script. Email me at Bush Joe Press. Let's talk.
Do you ever think people might be laundering money through RPG books?
No.
not enough. No, no, okay. It's just the thought,
dumbest so. Criminals ever.
That'd be a Coen Brothers movie, right?
I can tell you, though, the distribution of books in some cases. I won't name names, but let's just say I worked in the book industry a little bit when I was younger, and some of there was at least one distributor which I was told stop making waves. Why? They're mobbed up.
Oh, okay.
And that's how they were. You know, some of the things, the cash was being laundered because I was complaining when certain accounts didn't add up.
Mm-hmm. So that's why there's so many 50 Shades movies.
Stranger things happen. And I know we're all laughing about that. No one would be dumb enough to do RPG as a money laundering front, but literally they did this with comic books back in the 20s and 30s. So,
yes.
Of course, comic books were selling much better in those days, but you know, all right. All right. Hey folks, thanks for checking out the Ghost Show podcast. And I will play our contractually mandated exit music. I wish I could screen grab everyone dancing to the music because that's like my best part of favorite part of the podcast. So. All right. Thanks again for checking us out. We'll be back, if not next Sunday, then Sunday after. And I don't have a good exit line, so we'll just catch you next time on the Ghost Show podcast.
All right. Brash Unicorn.